With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, Truth Seekers. You're listening to A Measure of Truth on blogtalkradio.com, and I'm your host, Michael Fordham. If you've just clicked the link on my webpage, or you're listening on blogtalkradio.com, or even the Blog Talk Radio player on my Facebook page, and you want to call in live, look, we'd love to talk with you. So give us a call. The number is 347-326-9470. Oh, need a minute to get something to write with? But don't worry, I'll give the number again right after the commentary. Or if you like, you can Twitter me your questions and comments at twitter.com/ameasureoftruth. Also, if you haven't yet, why don't you look me up on Facebook? I'm the Michael Fordham with a photo of me in studio, and you can always email me your questions and comments at ameasureoftruth@gmail.com. Look, we got a great show for you today. We'll be right back after this. Hi, I'm Michael Fordham, host of A Measure of Truth on blogtalkradio.com, and I want to take a moment to talk to you about a heinous crime against humanity that plagues our nation and, yes, believe it or not, communities just like yours. Here's something you can do today to lend your support in the fight against human trafficking, also known as modern slavery. For example, Tanya was only 11 when she was forced to use her body for her own survival and the perverse desires of others. Now 18, Tanya knows no other life. She can't even remember when she was able to choose how she wanted to dress. Tanya dreams of being a teacher one day, and with the help of Bridge to Freedom programs and your support, they can empower her and others like her to move from surviving to thriving. You can make a huge difference in the life of a survivor this year through your support and donations to Bridge to Freedom Foundation. Bridge to Freedom is a nonprofit organization that provides aid to survivors of modern slavery who now live in the U.S., such as former child soldiers and victims of sex trafficking and forced labor. The cornerstone of Bridge to Freedom's work is personal and professional development to help survivors adapt and thrive in their new lives and communities, and find work to support themselves. The Bridge to Freedom Foundation needs your support to help people just like Tanya. They need your urgent action to ensure that they can continue to provide clothing and health and beauty services to these survivors. These are not only important for rebuilding self-esteem, but are crucial to finding employment. They're also in great need of storage containers and clothing racks to organize and store donations. And while donations of needed items are vital, the thing that will help to stop the spread of this injustice and prevent it from thriving undetected is by educating yourselves about human trafficking or modern slavery and knowing the signs and the proper authorities to contact if you become aware of a victim in crisis. Find out more at bridgetofreedomfoundation.org. And if you have a reason to suspect that someone might be a victim of human trafficking, please call the National Human Trafficking Resource Center hotline at 1-888-373-7888. Multilingual call specialists are on standby 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All calls are confidential.
Dr. Leonard M. Smith in the Mount Zion Baptist Church of Arlington, Virginia, invites you to worship with us Sunday mornings at our 7:30, 9:30, and 11:30 a.m. worship services. We'd like you to join Dr. Smith for Sermons from the Mount, Sunday mornings at 6:30 a.m. Please visit our website at www.mountzionbaptist.com, where you can learn more about our pastor, our ministry events, and how Mount Zion is becoming a kingdom-focused church. Worship with us on Sunday mornings at our 7:30, 9:30, and 11:30 a.m. worship services. And remember, Sermons from the Mount with Dr. Smith, Sunday mornings at 6:30 a.m.
On the next The Measure of Truth, we update the paper shuffle flimflam perpetrated by the mortgage and financial institutions that have stonewalled numerous families that would eventually lead them down the path of financial ruin. By now, most of us have heard the first place to start to resolve your financial crisis is to work it out first with your lender. But many borrowers have found that they get the runaround when they call their lenders for help, receive contradictory information from different employees, and are required to repeat the same time-consuming task over and over again. But in this instance, they met their match. Tonette Herring is not your ordinary victim. She's a fighter to the degree that you can't even imagine. We will first talk about how she won her battle, and then we will allow you to take a peek into the life of this incredible woman, who, although has suffered through 25 years of domestic violence, has emerged tenacious, determined, confident, successful, and extremely blessed. This incredible story starts with four simple words: I should be dead. And when you hear her story for yourself, you will know that truer words have never been spoken. This is not a judgment on the church, but merely a page from my personal experience. Next up, When Love Hurts, a true story written and performed by Tomette Herring, produced by Tomette Herring and Michael Fordham. We'll be right back after this.
I should be dead. It has taken me 25 years to write this article. 25 years to mature in my faith. 25 years to understand that God is in charge. 25 years to know that He will bless who He wants to bless, because favor ain't fair. 25 years to truly love myself. 25 years to realize that I do not have a heaven or hell to put anyone in, and vice versa. 25 years to finally look back and see the unmerited favor of His hand on my life. carefully protecting me through my children's past 25 years to claim, like in the movie Anton Fisher, that I'm still here. I am still standing. 25 years for my tears to finally dry up, 25 years to finally embrace that lost child in me and be restored over and above what I could even imagine. 25 years to get the sting, the utter hatred and mental cancer out of my system. 25 years to understand the value of forgiveness. 25 years to face the demons that haunted the essence of who I was and to bind them for affecting who I am today and who I will become tomorrow. 25 years, 25 years, y'all. Ooh, and it feels good. I release myself to the Master Muse to speak through me, to encourage, to uplift, to empower, and ultimately transform lives. So, why write about abuse, spiritual wickedness in high places, the role of the church leadership and the church? Is there such a thing as spiritual abuse? Should we really talk about that, or is the subject taboo? Why? As a minister's wife for nearly 14 years, I have a story. Like a slave finding freedom through the Underground Railroad, like a Holocaust victim surviving the insanity of Hitler's concentration camps, I survived. Now I thrive. I'm free now. But freedom, simply put, ain't free. It's been said, to whom much is given, much is required. Well, this is my story. It is not a judgment on the church, but merely a page from my personal experiences. I am now in what I refer to as the Phoenix years of my life, and I'm determined to ride this thing out until the wheels fall off. So let's talk. Abuse. A-B-U-S-E. Abuse. I think that there should be an accent on the last three letters, U-S-E. Use. I've often said over the many years, when you mix abuse with religion, you get Charles Manson, you get Jim Jones, you get David Koresh, you get a form of insanity that is now justified, reinforced and practiced from the pulpit to the pews. Fortunately, this disease does not exist in all churches. Thank God that there are some churches that have stepped forward to fight against these abuses in their leadership and in their congregations. However, the battle is not over. Some would prefer to keep the status quo and bury the fact that there are women praising God in the sanctuary by day and getting the life beat out of them by their God-fearing husbands by night. I purposely identified that the husbands are God-fearing with a small g and not God-fearing with a large g, because I'm not quite sure about what God they are serving. If men are to love their wives as God has loved the church, then that's the God I serve. During the early years of my marriage to a minister, I did everything that I could to be the right woman, wife, mother, lover, and supporter. I tried to do it by the book, but things didn't quite seem to work out for me the same way That was my naivety. I thought by marrying this wonderful, God-fearing person, my life would be great. We'd have God-fearing children that would be perfect and honorable. The family would be together forever, and God would bless our ministry. That didn't happen. It didn't. I'll spare you the gory details of many years of physical and mental abuse, details that I could not track back to my ex-husband. Why? There were a few visits to the hospital that will never show that I was beaten because I chose to lie to save myself the embarrassment of making some real bad decisions. Pride is an odd bedfellow, especially when sleeping with such an enemy. God knows. My sister knows. And his fellow minister and longtime friend knows. Because they drove me to my last emergency room visit in New Jersey prior to moving to Virginia. That's good enough for me. That has served me over many years as a bit of validation that my life was not a bad dream and I am not crazy. As an 18-year-old Christian teenager, emerging from an abusive father was no easy task. I found myself fleeing to an even greater abusive situation. He was approximately 14 years my senior, and roughly the same distance that my father was from my mother. Simply put, I married my father embodied in my ex-husband. I was a child, void of any street knowledge, still in college, silly, and extremely naive. He was very grown. All the telltale signs were there in the early 1980s. However, you don't know what you don't know. As abuse continued, it intensified. It matured in much the same way that a thief elevates the level of the next crime. Abusers get comfortable. Some get religious and hide behind the blood-stained banner. Please know, that is an illusion, a lie. I've come to understand that the only blood that was being shed was mine. However, I lost many years of my life getting the absolute worst advice from those that I trusted the most, leaders in the church. Fellow ministers and Christian friends told me to stick and stay. One fellow sister informed me that I should put on a bit more makeup, look pretty and be nice. Pray about it, sister. Give it to the Lord. And then my husband, the good reverend, would stop beating me. Well, the more I prayed, the more the beatings intensified. I found myself in a spiritual dilemma, the delta between what I was living in the physical and my spiritual teachings while desperately trying to reconcile between the two of them. I was taught that God hates divorce. I was taught that I must submit. I was taught that my body does not belong to me, but my husband. And I pretty much gave him free license to do as he pleased. And he did. One more caveat. He was a minister and respected in that community. Finally, the guilt kicked in. What kind of Christian example and mother would I be? I would go down in history as the one responsible for my children not having their father if I left. Ultimately, my children would hate me, and the church would turn away from me. from me, the sad, backslidden victim that I was. It's been said that church folk eat our young. Well, a lot of that did happen. Consequently, that caused me to separate from the organized church for many years following my divorce. I had profound anger, resentment, and held every minister in contempt. For many years, I would not speak about my experience for fear that I would cause another believer to falter in their spiritual walk. I just left in silence. I suffered. I suffered in silence. But God is in the restoration business. I never stopped talking to him the whole time. Even if the discussion started with the phrase, "I am angry with you, God. You let me down. I was your loving child, and you turn your back on me. I have come to learn that there is beauty in being honest with him. He wants your truthfulness. He is with you on your journey. He has been faithful to do just that. By the way, when you marry a sick person, you make your house the hospital. We are not created for anyone to work out his or her sicknesses through us or in us. Through many years of pain and strained relationships with my children, God has restored our communication. I am getting back the years that were stolen. All things are new, and God has blessed me. Yes, be healed, be delivered, and be set free. So what's the message in this? Is it time for the benediction? Not quite. The church and the leadership must transform along with the times. We must not be ashamed to call abuse out and deal with it. We must hold ourselves accountable to each other and provide the proper counseling, emergency shelter, and or support to the abuser and the abused, if that is what is required. To the church, get educated about what is going on within the walls of the church and the lives of the people that serve. Love them enough to tell them the truth about abuse. Hold the leaders accountable in the area, but in this area, by moving them out of the pulpit. Don't save them the embarrassment of letting them continue to preach. In doing this, they make a mockery out of a loving God. Educate families in the role of the husband and the wife. Share the boundaries of physical communication, what is good and what is bad. Include emotional professional counseling in that equation by inviting counselors into the church that are trained and equipped to address these issues. Let the world know that the church does not silently condone or provide a safe haven for the abusers, regardless of their position or title. As an individual that has spent many years in community service, visiting prisons from New Jersey to Virginia, talking to incarcerated adults, college-bound kids, and children who have killed, I can say with conviction that there are far too many women and men serving time in prison or in the graveyard for maiming or killing their spouses. That is why I declare that I should be dead. crazy, mangled, or in prison, but God. But God. I stand now at the crossroads of yet a new level in my journey and excited about what is next. I am giving relevance to my past by sharing my experience with those still caught in the fray. God is using my past to transform me and those around me and continuously expanding my territory. Over the past few weeks, God spoke to my heart in a still quiet voice. He said, "This thing that I have done for you is a great thing. Just remember to stay humble." Well, I don't know what that great thing is yet. However, if he said it, oh, I believe it. Like a child on Christmas Eve, I stand anxiously awaiting my next level, like a schoolgirl playing, catching the rhythm of the swinging ropes and waiting for her turn at double dutch. I'm here. I am here. I'm still standing.
Wow.
My latter days are so much better than my past.
Welcome back, Truth Seekers. You're listening to A Measure of Truth on blogtalkradio.com, and I'm your host, Michael Fordham. What an awesome piece. Every time I hear it, it just sends chills down my spine. Well, Tomette Herring, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you for having me again. Yes.
Well, I just want to thank you again for being brave enough to go ahead and share that piece with my listeners. Tell us a little bit about what actually drove you to start this and record this piece. And then from there, we're going to talk a little bit more about the situation and your update as far as the mortgage piece.
Yeah. You know, it's amazing because, you know, when you sit and listen to that and you realize that it's you.
Right.
There's such an, it's you have to acknowledge the awesome presence of God in my life. It grounds me. It brings me back. It's a reminder to me of where I've come from and how very far He's taken me. And and I'm just always so very humbled when I hear that piece. And thank you, Michael, for allowing me once again to be transparent, because, you know, this is really what God has called us into being, is transparent. A little bit about, how this piece evolved. You know, living in hell for so long, growing up in an abusive family, and then, with an abusive father. You end up picking that, you look for those traits in your dad, and you find them, and it's a subconscious thing, and you see that, and so you just attach yourself to that as you continue to grow and mature, and you don't know that you're attaching yourself to that same, what I refer to as generational curse.
Right.
And so you marry that, and as I spoke about, then you make your house the hospital when you marry sick people. And so, I was sitting back after many years of every day going by and realizing that there was not a day in my life, Michael, I didn't think about my ex-husband and just feel hatred, feel intense anguish. There wasn't a day. And I thought, that's, I'm coming up on 25 years of hating. And if you think that does not affect your life, your relationships, the work you do, even the good that you do, it affects it, then you're grossly mistaken. There is a point at which you have to forgive. And you've heard it a million times, you know, forgive not just for the person, forgive for you, because forgiveness is for you to heal you, to begin the healing process. Now, you can go through counseling, and I did, you know, but you need to heal. You need to give that piece of you back to God and let him go about mending you. You know when I realized I was actually healed, Michael?
When is that?
I realized that I was actually healed when his memory didn't come back anymore.
Hmm.
When a day went by, several days went by, and I didn't think of him anymore.
Hmm.
But that wasn't but only a few years ago when that stopped. And
wow.
when that stopped, I felt the need to finally write. I was able to finally write that story. I couldn't write it before then.
Hmm.
And I happened to be talking to a girlfriend, and I noticed she was writing for a magazine, and I said, you know, hey, you know, y'all looking for new writers? Okay, great. Well, I figured, let me get all that down and put it on paper, regurgitate it. Let me get it off because I'm free now. I could breathe. And I wrote this piece. I wrote it in like 5 minutes.
Hmm.
Because it was so in my spirit, waiting to get out, that it was really just channeled. When I got it all on paper, I called my girlfriend up, and I said, Dr. Lucy, I want to share this with you, because I knew that one of the things that forged Dr. Lucy and I together in friendship was that she was also married to a minister and had the same experience.
And we're going to talk to Dr. Lucy in a minute. So right before we get into that, why don't we talk a little bit about the strength that you have now and the fact that you're a no-nonsense kind of person. And I've seen women who've gone through this, who've been beaten down and just don't recover. But it seemed to have made you stronger. And in this situation, I noticed... when you first told me about your story and about what you had been going through, you even knew then that you were going to make this thing work on your behalf, even though it had been a year and a half and you have been, you know, getting the shaft on this deal and trying to sell your house, but you had come to the point where you were not going to take it anymore. Tell us a little bit about what you decided to do and what brought you to this point where you could no longer take anymore.
You know, whether it's the banking industry acting up and, I get to that point in me that says that's enough, okay? It's my life. It is the way my life has evolved, whether it was coming out of abuse and surviving and being able to say that's enough and then transforming that into something that was useful for everybody around me. Here's what happened. I got angry with God. And in that anger, you know how that works when you get angry with God. It don't work. you know, he goes silent on you. He goes radio silent on you. And when he didn't answer me the why, like why, God, did you allow me to go through all these many years of abuse in my relationship, in my family? I was not a bad kid. I was not a bad person. Why? You know, when he stopped, he didn't answer that question. And I didn't understand why. I got angry. And I said, you know what, I'm going to give relevance to it. Since you're not talking to me, God, I'm going to make it mean something. I'm going to make it change somebody's life, because I can't imagine that you allowed me to be brutalized. You allowed it, and for me to not use it for somebody's good. And if nothing else, somebody's going to be saved from this, somebody. Same thing with the banking. You know, I heard from my realtor that what was my final straw was that the same realtor was dealing with a couple that was 70-plus years old. The guy was waiting for a transplant, and the woman never worked. And all of a sudden, they told the same bank, told these folks, well, we're just going to take your retirement money. They only had a couple dollars in their account, and they were going to take everything they had. And at that point, I said, I'm sorry, that's enough. Okay, so since the 70-year-old folks can't fight for themselves, I will. I will fight for my betterment, but I will fight for the people who cannot fight for themselves. That is unheard of. That is unacceptable. And I'm sorry, that is inhuman. And so whenever I get to that point where whatever the issue is hits that my meter and I just can't take it anymore, that's it. I am off on we got to make it right.
Right, and that's when you decided to write some letters, and tell us a little bit about that letter writing campaign and your meeting thereafter.
From that point, as you know, if you've been listening into the other earlier shows, you know, it's been a year and a half of abuse from the banks. And then finally hitting that wall, I said, okay, the only way I can get their attention is that I have to go to the absolute highest level, and the next level above them was a congressional level. I wrote my congressman. I called my congressman office. I got the email addresses of all the bank presidents and all the people who talked to me and all the folks who told me, yeah, well, we can't help you and you're going into foreclosure and blah, blah, blah. I got all of that and made sure to succinctly communicate in one page to my congressman what I was told, how long it's taken, the abuse that was going on in the system, and I don't believe that this is the way this thing's supposed to work. And so that is what propelled into the next level. Then I went and start talking about it to anybody who and everybody who would listen in any forum. Folks, do you know that this stuff has got to be illegal, what they're doing to us? Are you not tired of this? Does anyone see or feel this pain? Is it just me? And when you start talking about it, that will draw people around you that have the same experiences, that are in that same pain. And then when we start getting people moving in one direction, guess what? Now you've got something powerful. So now you can transform. My life has been affected so that I can affect other people. Pain that God has allowed in my life has to be used. It just can't be harnessed. It's got to be used so that it can transform. So what has propelled me into, I'm a motivational coach. I am a success. I've been doing the success coaching. That wasn't something that I just woke up one day and said I was going to do. I was propelled into it. And that's what drives me. So no matter what the issue is, banking or abuse, it's all abuse to me. And it has to be fixed and addressed, and we need to put it on the table, and let's be honest about it. Let's call it what it is, and let's expose it.
Absolutely. And I like how you sort of outlined in your monologue there exactly what should be done within the church to make people more aware that this could be going on and to fix this problem that's going on in many churches across the nation. Of course, domestic violence is a problem nationwide, regardless of whether you're in church or not. But one of the other things I wanted to address before we switch on to that topic, so you did get resolution through all of this. You did close on your house, and you got everything straightened out to your satisfaction?
Well, let me tell you, Michael, and yes, you know, I think I reported last time that the closing was scheduled. Excuse me, closing scheduled for February 26th. I want to be clear about that. Yes, I did go into closing on the 26th of February and sign my paperwork off. All those contingencies that they tried to slap on and have me sign off on all these agreements so that I can continue to pay them on a promissory note for a house I didn't own anymore, all of that was taken off the table, all right? So, yes, all of that is done. I was able to hand those keys over, so voila, it is done. But what I wanted to encourage people to do regarding this before we move off this topic is you must, there's some things I provided. You must still continue to check your credit, folks. You must still stay on top of the banks because you must pay attention that they will be at some point and can come back in terms of what they call recovery, okay? The bank can come back and try to recover the dollars that it didn't get at the short sale, okay? That's the lost money, right? And so we want to make sure that they don't come back and get that. There may be some legislation out there or coming regarding that, so continue to Google the legislation for short sales. Watch that, okay? And also, you know, watch to make sure that bank is not coming on the backside, coming behind you. And, by the way, I did also receive a call from the bank to get today because I sent them a copy of my credit report and said, fix it. You break it, you fix it. And so they came back from the executive office and said, yes, Ms. Aaron, we did, get your email, and we forwarded this on. Please understand that the representative said that it takes about 30 days outside of the approval of the short sale before they can update your credit history, and it takes about 30 days beyond that, okay, to for it to start reflecting in your credit. So what that means for all listeners is 60 days to restitution from the time of approval.
Great.
So this is where I am now. I'm in phase two, and I'm watching. I'm not relaxing now. I'm watching. And I'm calling if I don't see a response in time. The clock has started. I'm watching them. And
right.
You stay on top of them until you get full restitution.
And Tom, give people also that email address that you put together so that people with questions or comments or anything could contact you.
Absolutely. What I did was set up an email address, and the email address is fightback.banks, with a S, @gmail.com. Again, fightback.banks@gmail.com.
All right. And what we're going to do is we're going to just take a quick break, and we'll be right back, and we'll be talking with Thomas Herring and also Dr. Lucy Young.
Absolutely.
Right after this.
Thanks, Mike.
Hi, I'm Michael Fordham, host of A Measure of Truth on blogtalkradio.com. I want to take a quick minute to talk to you about Young Lives DC 34. Young Lives is a unique, cutting-edge, nonprofit Christian organization designed to empower and equip pregnant and parenting teen moms to become productive citizens in the community. A program that partners teens and mature Christian women to provide teen girls in crisis with timely encouragement, guidance, and ongoing support. Through the power of presence, kids and teens' lives are dramatically impacted when caring adults come alongside them, sharing God's love. Because someone believes in them, they begin to see that their lives have great worth, meaning, and purpose. This is just the first step in a lifelong journey. The choices they make today based on God's love for them will impact their future decisions, the careers they choose, the marriages they form, and the families they raise. And all of this can be traced back to the time when a young life leader reached out and entered their world. For more information or to get involved, check out their webpage at www.younglives.younglife.org. Or if you're in the D.C. metropolitan area, call 202-399-7017. If I may paraphrase Stephen King, the most important things are the hardest things to say. These are the things you feel ashamed of because mere words only diminish the thought. You see, words shrink things that seem limitless when they were in our hearts and minds to no more than just living size when brought out into the open. Oh, but it's more than that, isn't it? You see, the most important things lie too close to wherever your secret heart is buried. Like landmarks to a treasure, your enemies would love to steal away and use against you at the worst possible moment. But still, you make revelations that cost you dearly, only to have people look at you like you're crazy, not understanding what you've said at all or why you thought it was so important that you almost cried when you were saying it. Do you know what's even worse than that? Is when the secret stays locked within and you can't get it out. Not for want of the courage to talk about it, but for want of someone who will just listen. Just listen. As someone who spends a great deal of time searching for the truth, the lesson that I've learned from this quote is, if you want the truth, you have to be prepared to release all judgment and be open enough to hear and accept the truth, in whatever form it might take. Judgment alters the truth by changing how it's told or presented. Not accepting the truth stops the bearer from sharing the truth. Ignoring the truth kills ambition and is a recipe for disaster and makes success impossible. We all over the years have learned to guard ourselves against deception, but I've also come to realize that in most cases, you don't even have to discover or discern the truth. You just have to let it be and see it for what it is. Maybe you have a story too. it doesn't have to be just like the one we've heard. Hey, I just want to let you know, I'm here, and I'm willing to listen. All I ask from you is a measure of truth.
Welcome back, Truth Seekers. You're listening to A Measure of Truth on blogtalkradio.com, and we're talking with Tymette Herring and also now Dr. Louise Young. Would you rather be called Louise or Lucy?
Lucy.
Lucy, okay. Dr. Yes. Lucy Young. How are you?
I am doing wonderful, Michael. Really good.
Good. Okay.
I just like to say before we get started, I wanted to thank you for your wisdom to want to speak the truth, be it the bad, the ugly, or the beautiful. Through this new technology called Blog Radio, I'm really excited about that. And I also wanted to thank my friend, who I refer to as my sister from another mother, for having the courage to tell her story, which, by the way, is also my story, in order that, you know, we might help someone else who might be going through the same thing.
Right.
And one more thing I want to say before we get started is this is in no way bashing of husbands or preachers.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it is our story and is what we wanted to let other women know who find themselves in the same boat.
Right.
Let them know that there is hope.
Okay. Very
Having
good.
Having said that, I'm ready.
All minds and hearts are clear.
And Dr.
Benediction.
And Dr. Young, I just need you to change the position on your phone just a little bit. You're coming through a little loud. So if you
okay.
can change the angle maybe a little bit, that might help.
Okay.
And tell us, Tymette, and Dr. Lucy, how long have you guys been friends?
Oh, let's see.
Well, it's more than 4 years now. I think we're coming up on 5, Lucy.
Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah.
And Dr. Young, tell us a little bit about your situation and how you came out of your abusive relationship.
Well, I was married to a preacher pastor. You know, I married my prince. And for the first 5 years, it was peaches and ice cream.
Hmm.
And all of a sudden, this I call it the dark side. The demon came out, and I guess I dealt with that for about a year because, unlike my sister, you know, a year was all I was going to take. Here's for me, Michael. I came up with 3 brothers, and so I had to fight early. I knew how to fight. Didn't have a problem with fighting. My situation was, why should I have to come home and fight after fighting with other folk on the job all day long? That just made sense to me. It really did. And so one day it got so bad, I said, that's it. I walked away from everything. And he was the kind of person, he said, you'll never leave because you have too much here. You like being the first lady of the church. And I just said, you really don't know me that well. I walked away from everything. I said, you can burn my clothes, you can put them in the river. I don't care, because this I don't need. My sanity needs more to me than having
right.
to go through this. And I was listening, and, you know, I was some of the questions you were asking, Tymette, about what did you do, how did you come out. 2 things I never stopped doing. I never stopped going to church, and I never stopped tithing on my time, talent, and resources. I was determined that no matter what was going on, I was going to continue to go to church because I knew that God had an answer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you hear people, you see them in church, and then they disappear, and then they come back, and you say, well, where have you been? And it's always, well, I've been going through something. Well, here's how I feel. If you're sick, you're supposed to go to the hospital. Okay,
right.
If you're going through something, I would think that the church would be the place to help you get through whatever it is you are going through. If you are brave enough to discuss it and tell somebody, you are hurting and you need help.
Now, your husband, was he a minister or the pastor of the church?
He was the pastor also.
Mm-hmm.
Did you continue to go to the same church you were attending?
No. Once I left, I left.
I see.
I left everything.
Mm-hmm.
And but I didn't stop going to church. I went to another church.
Mm-hmm.
The very next week, I was in another church. And also, let me just say this. I know you asked Thomas something about when was she healed. For me, because when I left, I said to myself, I will never, ever step foot in a church that he's in. And if he's there, I'm going to turn my heels and walk out the door. Well, here's what I said to that. You can never say what you're not going to do. You can always say what you don't intend to do, but never say what you're not going to do, especially if you are connected to the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I realized that I was healed when we were in a church together for an activity. And there, I had no ill feelings, and I didn't leave. And I was at the point that I could speak. I knew that I had been healed from all of that. That was my eye-opening. I said, thank you, Jesus. It felt good.
Right. And it sounds to me, based on what you told me, even though you've had physical conflicts with this guy, mm-hmm. that I don't hear that you were really ever afraid of him.
Well, yeah, I was, because I went.
You were, okay.
Yeah, because he had he had a way of escalating and then exploding. See, explode. Because one night he held a knife to my throat and called his mother and said, "I will kill her up in here." And at that point, I'm thinking, "Okay, all right, I'm planning my escape. How I'm going to get away? I'm going to jump out the window. I break a leg. I just did something." Something just to keep quiet, because when somebody is in that mode, your best thing to do is whatever they ask, do it.
Right.
So
right.
For me at that time, my thing was to keep quiet. Now, we, as far as words, we could go toe to toe, and I think another problem that he had with me is that I could stand toe to toe with him whenever we were in a conversation, and because of his pride and his you can't stand with me with the words. Then he resulted to silence. And I said, okay, this is not going to work for me. Violence? No. I would leave. I've called the police to come and take him out of the house, and did not know how he got out of jail. I just know the next day I went to work. Because at that time, I didn't care how he was going. I'm not going to call the police and have you locked up and then turn around and spend money to get you out of jail, too. No, to me, that didn't make sense. And here's the other thing. He used to get upset with me because if he pushed the argument to a level of violence, I'd leave. I'd go to Neiman Marcus. I go to whatever expensive store I wanted to go to, buy whatever I wanted to buy. Didn't even think about looking at the price tag. And then I would go check it to an expensive hotel where I could get me a good night's sleep. And that would, he would be upset about that. And I said, you know what? There's one way to fix this. Let's not have these heated arguments. You know, I realize that everything can't be peaches and ice cream. But I do know that there is a way we can sit down and talk about whatever is wrong. You know, because as a female, I am a responder. It's my job, how I see it. I wanted to make my spouse happy. I tell young women, there's nowhere in the Bible that it says that a wife has to love her husband, but it does say that the husband is mandated to love his wife. Now, here's the good thing about that. If a brother know how to love his wife like Christ loved the church, which is unreservedly, undeservedly, then what that does is put the woman in the place that I have coined, I can't help it, which means that before that man can think about what he needs, she got it for him.
Mm-hmm.
Because she know that she has a covering. She know that she has somebody that's going to protect her from all harm, hurt, and danger. Can you imagine marrying somebody who you think is your covering, who is supposed to protect you, only to find out later that this covering is the one that's going to cause you the harm?
Right.
That's rough.
Yeah.
Hey, Michael, I know that you've got time.
Yeah, but we were going to take a quick break for a second, and we're going to just pause for just 1 second. We'll come right back after this, okay?
Wonderful.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
Hi, I'm Michael Fordham, host of A Measure of Truth on blogtalkradio.com. And I just wanted to let you know that during the next few months, Healthy Kinder Incorporated will be running its Give 5 campaign to raise money for childhood obesity prevention programs throughout the metropolitan area. Please visit the Give 5 campaign page on the website today at healthykinderkids.org to learn more about how you can make a significant difference in the lives of our children. Please share this message with your friends and family members to support this very important and worthy cause. Even their children can benefit from the Healthy Kinder programs. We encourage you to contact your congressperson and state representatives and ask them to support President Obama's health care reform plan. Prevention is key to the survival of our future generation. And thank you for taking time out of your busy day for A Measure of Truth. Kurt Mansell is a man determined to change the face of the world by representing God's truth by example. His perception and insight of the Word of God comes across with eye-opening illumination of the Scriptures. His approach to ministry is that of a servant ordained to do what the Lord has revealed. See what diligence and dedication to the Word has enabled him to discover concerning the riches God's kingdom makes available to us all. The Acceptable Spiritual Mind by Kurt Mansell, available at Barnes & Noble's and Amazon.com.
Welcome back, Truth Seekers. You're listening to A Measure of Truth on blogtalkradio.com. Okay, Dr. Lucy, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, great. Fantastic. And how about you, Tomette? You're on again as well?
I am on again. Can you hear me?
Yes. Now, go ahead and pick up your comment, and we'll go from here.
Yeah, real quick. One of the things, as Lucy was talking, and y'all listen, I can call her Lucy because she's my friend. Okay? She's Dr. Lucy to y'all, okay? No, but, one of the things that I thought about as she spoke, see, when Lucy went through hers, she was much older than me.
Right.
When I went through mine, I was 18 years old.
Mm.
I was a kid.
Right.
And I married a man who was 13, 14 years my senior.
Mm-hmm.
Two different worlds.
Right.
And then as I matured, I literally grew up under him. And I finally left in my 30s.
Right.
Mm.
See, that's a lifetime. So all of the things, like I hear Lucy say, I went to Neiman Marcus. I couldn't spell Neiman Marcus. credit card, this man wouldn't let me breathe, let alone independent enough to even talk back to him. What?
Mm.
No,
mm-hmm.
There was no talk back. Mm. There was no dialogue. You all wouldn't have had the ability to hear me today if I had a dialogue with him like that. See, everybody can't do the same thing because everybody's not the same. So, but the beauty in our experiences is that, paralleling, if you look at, she went to and joined another church immediately, straight away, stayed in church. What I did was I walked away from everything and I walked away from organized church. I didn't walk away from God. I walked away from the organized church because they, in my view, at that time, were a part of the abuse because they told me to stay.
Right.
It was
right.
them, and I went to them.
Exactly.
And
right.
so when I realized that I didn't get restitution from them, I can't go back to them. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I can't do that. So for 5 years, I didn't step foot in the church for 5 years.
Mm.
And I know it is nothing but God that brought me back to his church because that is the right way to do it. Like I said, Lucy did it the right way. I took the heathen route, but guess what? we hear. We back.
Right.
And God, thank God that he deals with us individually as well as collectively.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree, Luce?
Most definitely. And I think for me, Michael, my background too had a lot to do with it. My father was a preacher. So I love preachers. I place them in a high regard. I mean, they are up there on the pedal. So for me to marry a preacher was like a dream. You know, almost, okay, you got your father. So my background was totally different. Needless to say, when I found out that this preacher man had a dark side, I was just taken back. I was blown away. Because my picture of what a preacher is supposed to be was not what he was showing me after 5 years. It was just, that wasn't it. So, I had to reevaluate. I'm like, oh, my God, did I make a mistake? What has happened here? And then you go through, and I'm sure Tommy went through this, too. You go through these different emotions. First, you're angry. No, first, you're ashamed. Because you don't want nobody to know.
That's right.
Then you get angry. Then you get mad. Then you become bitter. And if you're not careful, you have this, you harbor this thing in your heart. And bitterness is like cancer. It'll eat you up. As I heard Thomas say, you have to forgive, not for the other person, but for yourself. And that is so very, very true, that you have to do that. But as first ladies, which is what we are noted as, women who marry pastors, are called first ladies, we feel that if there's a problem in the home, such as a physical abuse, that we are supposed to keep quiet for the sake of the ministry. And I found that that's to be the antithesis of what it really should be. Keeping quiet is a mistake.
Right.
And it became a national regard when Juanita Bynum and her husband, it was all on the media.
Right.
So this is real. It actually happened. And my thing is, a lot of I was speaking with another pastor friend of mine, and he had to, this is what, really was healed from all this and could speak about it. He said to me, "But Lucy, all of us are not like that." And,
of course not.
This time I'm thinking, okay, yeah, but I haven't seen any difference. But, the truth is all men are not like that.
That's right.
And Dr. Lucy, I just wanted to ask you a question because we did cover this with Tomette. Did you go through any, therapy or anything like that? Or did you see someone that helped you to get through this? Or
I really did not, because like Tomette, since she walked away from the church, I didn't. I became more involved. And for me, I am a musician. And so I just engulfed myself in the music ministry. So it was church and work, church and work, church and work. And I didn't talk about it for a long time. Having that in the back of my head, I think the first time I was able to speak about it in a public arena was about maybe 3 or 4 years ago. Shortly after I met Tomette at a women's conference that was given by co-pastor Wilson, Mary Wilson at Union Temple Baptist Church. And she knew me, but she did not know that story. And when I finished telling it, I came up out of the audience because they had they were asking people to come and share some things, and I felt compelled at that time to share that story. I came up out of the audience, and she greeted me, and she looked at me real strange, and I said, "I have something that I have to tell." And I looked at Sister Wilson, and I said, "And this is the first time I've said this in a public arena to 500 women." When I got through, she had tears in her eyes. And she said to me, "I had no idea you were going through that. You could have called me." But at that time, I was too ashamed. I don't want nobody to know.
Yeah, and where does the rock go, right, Lucy?
Right.
You're supposed to be the rock. You are the cornerstone, right?
Exactly.
You know, you're supposed to keep the man straight so he can preach the word. And
yeah.
And now, where does the rock go? You're not.
Where does the rock go? And this brother was, don't get me wrong, very gifted and still is gifted when it comes to preaching.
Mm-hmm.
And music. He is a musician and taught me a lot of what I knew and know. So it was just, you know, it's like, did I make a mistake? What happened? What did I do wrong? You know, you go through all of that. God, what did I do wrong? And like Tommy, I question God. You let me down. I'm a good person. You know, it's almost like the movie, Why Did I Get Married? When the girl said, I'm going to peer onto this mountain to save my marriage.
You know, Dr. Lucy, was there any guilt about getting a divorce because of your situation?
No guilt at all. And
I'll
tell you
why. Okay. Oh, well.
Every time that brother hit me, I said, Jesus, give me strength. Or every time we were fighting, give me strength. And I said to him, I'm not the kind of person who will tell you something over and over again. And not do it. I said to him, listen, this is it. You got one more time. I'm going to walk away. If it happens again, I'm gone. And, we will be in the divorce court. And I was at the point where the lawyer was saying, well, you can't have this, you can't have. I said, listen, I don't want anything. As a matter of fact, I want my name back. I don't even want his name.
Right.
I said, Judge, please give me back my name, because right now that's the only thing I know that's good is my name.
Can I just add to that, Michael? Because
yes, I was going to ask you that next.
You know, I don't know if your show's running over or not, and you know.
No. Like I said, we've extended the show this time around.
Oh, good.
Okay.
We've got another 20.
Look, you got two talkers on the
the
line.
I'm prepared.
Okay. Well, Michael, you know. Here's the key. Here's what's scary to me.
Mm-hmm.
That while I wish I would have had the training that Lucy had and the upbringing in terms of knowing, okay, when enough was enough, I didn't have that. I had no measure to know that, first of all, what he was doing was not acceptable. I had nothing to tell me that was not acceptable because I came from an abusive father.
Right.
So what?
Mm-hmm.
How will I know?
Mm-hmm.
I know this much about myself.
Mm.
Had he had not beaten me to the point of being rolled out for the fifth time in the hospital and them telling me that you're bleeding internally and wanting me to tell the truth because they knew it wasn't, I fell down the steps. But that when his friend was standing over me, his friend and minister stood over me and my sister stood over me, and his friend ran his fingers through my hair. And, oh, by the way, they had to drive me because I couldn't see because my eyes were beaten to the point that there were slits. So I couldn't see to drive to the hospital. But when they got me there and rolled me out, his friend, who told me when I pulled him over several times, had little meetings with him at Dunkin' Donuts saying, he's beating me. No, he'd never do that. No, come on, you got it wrong. No. Okay, now you've seen him beat me. He's beat me in front of you. And my sister. And so now they're standing over me, and only thing that he could say to me as he runs his fingers through my head and felt the lumps in my head, he said, you must leave. He's going to kill you. He's going to kill you. And only thing, do you know that I would still be there today? I would still be there if the physical abuse had stopped, and even if the mental continued, the verbal continued, I would still be there.
Wow.
Because I would not have allowed, I would not have wanted to separate my family. That was more important to me. And God, you know what I thought at the end of the day? I was so afraid that God would not love me if I got divorced. I was convinced from the teaching that I received that God would not love me if I divorced, that my children would not love me. I would lose everything that mattered to me the most if I left that situation. I was determined to stick and stay if it meant my death. I didn't care. So you understand that when you're like that, God, only God knew that he had to do something drastic to get me moving, to get me out of that, because I would have died there. That's why in the article I say, I should be dead.
Was that the last time? Was that the last time you went to the hospital, and did you not go back from that point forward?
I went right back to him, yes.
Oh, my God.
Went back to him. Where was I going to go? That's my family, right?
Uh-huh.
Remember, I'm still young. I'm young.
But then how did you finally make that transition? I mean, people who might be in this situation, they need to know. They need to know
got out. That's important, okay, because I am out. I did get out. I did survive, right? Hence the article. I lived to write about it, right?
Right.
Okay,
right.
So, folks, here's the real deal. Got down to Virginia, and the physical beatings stopped, but the mental, verbal abuse continued.
Oh, so he came down to Virginia with you. You both moved down.
I moved down here with him because he was transferred with IBM at the time.
Oh,
okay.
Wow.
And so, you know, I think my last straw was I came home. I'll never forget. I came home, living right out here in Virginia, came home, and my son was limping.
Hmm.
And I asked him what was wrong. He said, Daddy beat me. And then
really?
I went around. And I walked over to where my dog, I had a Cocker Spaniel at the time, and the Cocker Spaniel, there was a blood trail. And I saw the blood trail through the kitchen, and I thought, that's my son's blood. I'm going to kill him. Okay, that's it. You know, beat me, but not my children. And, you know, that was a negotiation with him. I told him, you beat me, fine, but do not beat me in front of my children. And you know what? He was happy to accommodate me because that's the sickness. When a man agrees that I'm going to keep beating you, but I just won't do it in front of kids if that's what you want. And so he...
And if a man agrees that you even put that offer on the table, shows your state of mind.
But that's the state of mind. I don't care anymore. I don't care anymore. But when I saw my son limping, he had beat my son with a 2x4.
Oh, my goodness.
And that same 2x4, you know that 2x4 you put in the window to stop the glass sliding door?
Yeah.
Keep it from, you know. Yeah, well, he had beaten the dog with that too on that particular day, and that was the last for me. And I come and I thought it was my son's blood. Instead, it was the dog's blood. And the dog was listless, laying in its cage, not moving, just kind of breathing shallow. Okay? And at that point, so that was it for me. And I remember sitting up that night over his body, while watching him sleep. He used to, you know, have a problem sleeping. When he'd sleep at night on his back, he'd snore, and you could hear him struggling to breathe. Well, you know, I used to always tell him, roll over on your side, you know, something's going to happen one day, you know. Well, I was sitting over him that particular night, and I was listening to him struggle breathing as he would, you know. And I was contemplating how to help him out. I was thinking about, How can I end this man without people finding out, without them catching me? How can I do this? And then I put my finger over his nose and hold his nose to see how long I could hold it. But then I thought, nah, they would say asphyxiation. I can't get the words out of my mouth.
They're gonna
track it back. How can I do him without it coming back to me? I couldn't figure out how to do him. And then this is the silly thing, because you know, every once in a while, you know, I got jokes. But I thought, I am in the middle of this insane thing. You're trying to figure out how to off somebody. You know, then it came to me. What happens, fast forward, if I'm successful at killing this man? If I'm successful, I go to jail because it's premeditated.
Right.
And in jail, since I've done community service in jail and I've worked in jails for years and I've ministered to people in jails for years, those women, there's a woman, you know, I refer to her as Bertha. You know, Bertha will come by and she will want me to be her girlfriend, and I ain't having it. That, Michael, I know it's crazy. I know it's crazy, and I know y'all probably think they're going, this woman has lost her. But I'm telling you, that's what kept me out of jail. I did not, because I had been in jail too many times doing ministry, that I was so afraid to go to jail and be abused in jail. So I decided I can't kill this man. I've got to let him live and let God handle it. But at that point, I sat there on the bed and I said, God, fix it. Fix it, because I'm at my end. Either he's going to kill me or I'm going to kill him. Something's going to happen.
Tomette, I'm ready for you to get away from this guy. So you have to tell us right here and now about the day you left. That's what I want to hear.
I didn't leave. I didn't leave, Michael. You know what happened?
What happened?
That's exactly what happened. I said, God, this is it. And do you know what? That was Good Friday.
Uh-huh.
Good Friday was the next day. And I got this call. He told me, by the way, he would never leave. And so I got this call at work, and it was him.
Hmm.
He said, how you doing? I said, fine. He said, I'm leaving. I said, okay. He said, I'll let you know where I am when I get there. I said, okay. I said, will you be home? The only thing I wanted to know was, will you be home when I get there? He said, no, I will not. I said, okay. I got home, ran up the steps like a little kid, opened the door, closed the door, fell against the back of the door, looked around the house and said, called his name. He didn't answer.
Hmm.
I broke down and cried, and I worshiped right there and said, thank you, Jesus. Just thank you. Because I knew that that was the beginning of my new beginnings.
Right.
So, no, I didn't leave. God moved them.
Wow.
Michael, can I, while we're right there at that point, be a little more real with you? When Tama was talking about how she was going to get rid of her husband. For me, I knew it was time to leave when I found myself in front of a gun store. Anticipating going in to buy a gun because I had said the next time it happens, somebody gonna die and it ain't gonna be me. And I stood there and I had the same kind of thoughts that Tom had had. It's amazing how we think alike. And I said, he ain't worth going to jail for. That's when I knew it was time for me to leave.
So you did leave. Did you leave that day?
Oh, I left that. No, I didn't leave that day. He was good for about 3 weeks, and then he acted up. And when he acted up, I left. I got in my car, and I left with whatever was on my back. That was it.
So where did you go?
I went to a hotel, and I called the job and said, "Look, I need a couple of days off." I went and filled out an application for an apartment in Boston Common. Within a week, I had the apartment. I moved in, moved up on the 15th floor because I wanted to feel secure. Moved into a building where you have to be announced to get into.
Right,
The amount of money that it took for that security. Went to work, and I said, because they knew him, and they liked him at work. Told the guard, because where I worked, you had to be announced in. The building. I said, there's a problem. And I took out a warrant against him so he couldn't come within a certain number of feet to me. And I said, he's not allowed on the property. I changed, at that time we had cell phones. I mean, we had beepers, didn't have cell phones. I changed my beeper. I told my secretary, if he calls, I am not taking his calls. I remember very clearly she, during that week, she came to me. She said, oh, please, just take his call. Just take his call. He's so upset. Just take his call. I said, I told you I'm not taking his call. So I don't know what to do. I said, I'll show you what to do. I picked up the phone and hung it up. I said, that's what you do. Okay? Next. Because it's like, when I break away, I break away. We didn't have chick nor child together. So I did not have to worry about seeing him, you know.
What'd you say, Lucy?
He didn't have chick nor child.
Nor child. I love it.
Now, after the fact, did you have any other problems with him after you had established your new residence and all of that?
When I would leave work, I would always check my rearview mirror to make sure nobody was following me. But for about a month, he tried calling me. He had different preachers to call me. And I said, you know what? Y'all been blessed, so you can't fix it. And I've been delivered from Egypt. Once you get delivered, you don't go back. And then the only conversation, I had no conversation with him. When he called, one conversation, I take that back, and I said to him, from this day forward, you have to speak to my lawyer. And I had nothing else to say to him. So if he would call, I'd call my lawyer. Said, look, I just got a call from him, and my lawyer would call. I just, and it took about a year to get the divorce because court, there's built-in time. But If I could have had my divorce the next day, I'd have had it. But
Michael,
the court told you up.
Oh, go ahead, Tomet.
Michael, I just, you know, and I do want to say this because, you know, Lucy, although our stories do parallel, you know, there's some things, some decisions I wish I had that she had. There's some tools I wish I had at the time that she had. Well, she was, first of all, she's older, you know, which is, you know, great because she had the internal, she had some maturity. I didn't have that.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I was doing the best I could as a kid growing up under this. But I can tell you this, that, Michael, you know, forgiveness is so very necessary, and I want to bring it home to this, you know, that, you know, because I don't want to see anybody lose their life.
Right.
When you find yourself in a position where you're deciding if you're going to take a life, this is wrong. This
mm-hmm.
is wrong.
Wrong.
Absolutely.
Okay, that's when you know something's got to happen.
Absolutely.
Okay, that God has to intervene, or you got to have enough sense to go, I got to walk away.
Absolutely.
But, Michael, can I just say that, you know, something has happened in me through my, you know, this abuse has transformed my life. It has made me into the woman that I am. And it put in me something that I don't want to see anybody hurt. Anybody,
Absolutely.
Michael. That's
mm-hmm.
why I fight with the banks. That's why, because I don't want to see anybody abused because of what I've lived through.
Right.
One of the other things is, why is forgiveness so very serious? It affects other relationships, your relationships with your children, your relationships
right.
with other men. It's hell
mm-hmm.
on that. You
mm-hmm.
got to
oh,
let
yeah.
that stuff go in
right.
order so that you can mature and get beyond it. Listen, 2 years ago, my ex, my first husband, he passed.
Mm-hmm.
I went up to, and actually Dr. Lucy drove up to Jersey with me to support me, and I was going up to Jersey to support my children. Okay,
mm-hmm.
and I can tell you that God is a deliverer, and that He can give you such love in situations that you would not believe, in your mind you wouldn't believe that you could love somebody back and love their people back, even though they all knew what was going on. And so to walk in that funeral and to be able to hug his current wife, to see his other children, to see, you know, their other mothers, to see my kids and to embrace them and to love on his family is just a liberating thing. And you can't
yeah,
do that being fake.
Right.
You got to be delivered to do that.
Yeah.
And I thank God for a friend like Lucy. I thank God because I was nervous. Wasn't I nervous, Lucy?
Mm-hmm.
I was nervous. And I just walked in there and I said, well, Lord, it's in your hands, but just let me be like you. I want to be more like you. And give me the love. And I was able to embrace everybody there and walked away with nothing on me in my heart other than love and wishing him the very best. And I did, by the way, have a conversation with him right before he died. And that was the conversation that the first conversation we had in 10 years, a decade.
Hmm.
And the only thing that I said to him was, I heard you having problems. He said, yeah, baby. I said, please know that there is someone in Virginia who's praying for you and your family. And I want you to know one thing, if you don't remember anything else. I said, I want you to know that God is in charge no matter what. I said, do you hear me? And he said, yes, baby. I said, no matter what. I said, God bless you, and I'm praying for you.
Hmm.
That was the last words I spoke. He died shortly thereafter.
Wow.
I didn't need an apology, Michael.
Hmm.
There's no words. Maybe my next book that I work on will be entitled When I'm Sorry Is Not Enough, because sorry would not have been enough.
Mm-hmm.
Only thing I needed to do was relieve myself. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
That's why the call had to happen. That's why our last contact after 10 years had to happen, and I thank God for it, and I thank God that at least he knew that I forgave him.
Yeah.
And I just said, I did forgive you. I forgave you. And that's liberating, Michael.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to know, that's God. Because if it was by me, it would have never happened.
Mm.
You know, Lucy, what do you think?
I totally agree. And one of the things I want listeners to know, especially First Lady, that America teaches and maybe going through something, don't strike back. Don't bash. Don't put out negative thoughts. Because here's what happens. You can't ask God to bless what you're doing. And one voice and then another voice asking God to hurt over here. It just doesn't work that way. And only experience has taught that to me. When I was married, Michael to this preacher, he was working on his doctorate. And I remember, I remember sitting at the computer typing his thesis with great big old crocodile tears in my eyes, saying, why do I have to do this? Because I could have crushed him, had everything. He never would have made it. I had all of his information. I could have crushed him.
Right.
And he's got to be the most craziest person in the world. Here, I'm the only one. I'm helping him, and I could destroy him all at the same time. But there was something in me saying, no, you have to do the right thing. And I'm sitting there, just tears running down my face. I couldn't understand it. I understand it now, because now I'm a doctor.
Right. Well, ladies, we are running out of time, and I want to make sure that Dr. Lucy, did you have any websites or any information that you wanted to share with us, or a contact or anything like that?
Well, I can give you my email address. It's lucy.young364813@verizon.net. I now hold the position as the Minister of Music at First Rising Mount Zion Baptist Church. So I can always be reached there. But this has been just wonderful for me. And the more comment and I talk about this kind of thing, it's therapy. It's more therapy for us too. Believe it or not.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I hope you will both come back and talk with us again soon. And we're coming up on just 3 minutes left to close the show. And I want to thank you both for being brave enough to come in here and share your story. And it was just an amazing show. And I can't wait to listen back to it myself. And I want to thank you once again. And we will talk with you both very soon.
God bless you, Michael.
Thank you.
Alrighty, bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. And special thanks to the Leo for that awesome soundtrack, my new intro and opening for the show. Thank you very much. Well, special thanks to our new associate producer, Donna Hardiman, who's just come on board and who you'll be hearing a lot more from in the future. I'm Michael Fordham, and you've been listening to A Measure of Truth. Before you go, here's a little something to take with you. Ask God for wisdom daily, but know that your lesson can come from anybody or any situation, good or bad, friend or foe. Watch your thoughts. They become words. Watch your words. They become actions. Watch your actions. They become habits. And watch your habits. They become your character. Watch your character. It becomes your destiny. Until we meet again, take care of what becomes of you.
Come on, a measure of the truth, measure of the truth, speak it. Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.